So just to start things off, I have to ask, why did you call me Tater in that message today?
Okay, so at work, we have a client in a very small town in Louisiana that's a car dealership, and they still do newspaper ads. And in those ads, we do testimonials from people who have bought cars from that dealership.
Okay.
And today, one of the people featured in the testimonial, his name was Tater Tarver.
No.
And it featured him and his family. And
was he the Tater in quotes?
No.
Oh, and, wow.
And his son was pictured, but we didn't know what his name was. And so we called the client and asked what his name was. And I said, is his name Tot? And it got a laugh out of the client. Turns out the kid's name is Tanner. And I prefer mine golden brown.
Ah, very good. Very good. All right, but this is not a automobile advertisement podcast. Welcome to Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs
like us
decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is
The Fiendish Plot of Dr. Fu Man Travis.
Okay. That one's going to be easy to fit into a Twitter tweet. And I am joined, as always, here in the shop by my co-host and co-producer, a Sean in the Dark,
nice.
A.K.A. There's a Girl in My Sean. And in addition to that, we are proud and excited to welcome back to the show returning guest, Chelsino Royale.
Nice.
A.K.A. Peter Chellers. Further description of the show, the tagline at the top says, watch, chop, retrofit, because essentially that's what we do here. We watch older movies, sometimes they're classic films, sometimes they're tire fires, and then we retool them by tweaking the design with new parts. Quick disclaimer, we're not actually in favor of remake, reboot, sequel-dependent culture. Fuck it. This is more of an exercise in satire, irony, and we try to be funny.
And a lot of times we succeed.
Very good. All right, so with that, we're going to go into our first segment, which is movie news. And movie news, we try to, throughout the week, look for stories that are related to movies or related to remakes or just in general things that our audience might find interesting. And if it is appropriate, we start off the movie news with an RIP. So this week, the actor Carol Lynley has died. And she was in The Poseidon Adventure, and she was 77 years old. I'm just going to see real quick how she passed away. She was also in Return to Peyton Place, Under the Yum Yum Tree, and Bunny Lake is Missing. She suffered a heart attack at her home in the Pacific Palisades. She was 77. So, rest in peace to Carol Lynley. And so, after that, we've just got a couple more stories. The first two you sent to me, Sean, the Gretel and Hansel teaser poster has been revealed, and it's promising a very grim fairy tale.
Yes.
I saw what you did there.
And, well, grim is spelled like the adjective, but it's obviously a play on words. And so you said in your message, you're like, I really like the details in the trees. And I looked at it for a minute, and I looked at it for a minute. And then finally, I saw what I thought was a big jack-o'-lantern in the outline of the trees. Can you not see that?
Yeah, I can see how you would see that, but
it actually spells out what?
Feed.
Feed.
It's creepy.
In front of a very modern-looking house, which is a twist on the witch's gingerbread house.
Uh-huh. So it's going to be interesting how that shapes up. Also, Mr. America, the trailer for that has been released, and it is starring Tim Heidecker, and he's running for district attorney in a zany political mockumentary. Love Tim Heidecker. It's going to be really, really entertaining, I'm sure.
I really like the slug line where it says he's running for district attorney, and technically he's not a murderer.
Technically. Very good. Technically, this is a podcast. And then, Chelsea, you had a movie news story as well, right?
Yeah. My favorite actor on the planet, the man, the legend, Bob Newhart, turned 90 on September 5th.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So happy birthday to Bob Newhart. To you, Bob Newhart, when you listen to this, give yourself a pat on the back.
We love you.
And I think that will wrap us up on movie news for this week. Lightning round.
Yeah.
That's the way we've been doing it lately, is just hitting those headlines, which is a lot more efficient and find myself reading the articles verbatim less. It's time for our next segment, and there it is. I hear the phone ringing, so it must be time for the Department of Corrections Department with Chief Corrections Officer Dana.
Hello, choppers. The actor who played Pepe Lomoco in Algiers is not Charles Boyer, it's Charles Boyer. I know who he is from watching I Love Lucy. Interestingly enough, there's an I Love Lucy episode where Lucy's reading a paper that talks about Ricky's upcoming screen test for a film called Don Juan, and Yvonne DiCarlo is one of the actresses mentioned as being considered for the female lead in the film. Labyrinth, the miniseries, has nothing to do with Labyrinth, the musical fantasy movie starring David Bowie and Jennifer Connelly. As far as which TV show started first, The Addams Family began on September 18th, 1964. The Munsters began on September 24th, 1964. That's kind of creepy and kooky. Hasta la next week.
All right, Dana, thank you for that. We really do appreciate it. And I did have one correction of my own. Last week in the opener on the top, I wished some happy birthdays. And one of those was a person who I referred to as Pete Best, when in actuality, Pete Best was one of the people referred to as the Fifth Beatle. And our friend, friend of the show, friend of the brewery, friend of trivia, is named Keith Best. And he was sure to point that out to me the other night. So apologies, and we still wish you a very sincere happy birthday. So I think that that will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department for this week. Which brings us to the theme of the episode. In celebration of his 94th birth date on September the 8th, we're talking about the films of the great Peter Sellers. He was born Richard Henry Sellers on September 8th, 1925. He was an English film actor, comedian, and singer. Some people would say that he's one of the best comedic minds to come out of England since Charlie Chaplin.
I've read that too, and I couldn't disagree more.
You couldn't disagree more. Okay. So you're saying that it's an understatement, that he's just like way better than Charlie Chaplin?
No, the opposite. I love Peter Sellers' dramatic work.
Okay.
I do not find him remotely amusing.
Ah, interesting. Okay. Well, you might be in the minority there, but that's all right. He performed in the BBC radio comedy series The Goon Show, which was influential to later things like Monty Python, all the way up to Mr. Bean. And then he found a worldwide audience through his many film characterizations, among them Chief Inspector Clouseau in The Pink Panther.
Did you know that started on the radio show?
Oh, really?
It did.
I did not know that. I did read that the role was originally supposed to go to Peter Ustinov, but he backed out, and so they got Peter Sellers, which was probably an improvement. In his personal life, Sellers struggled with depression and insecurities. He was an enigmatic figure. He often claimed to have no identity outside the roles that he played. His behavior was often erratic and compulsive, and he frequently clashed with directors and co-stars, especially in the mid-70s when his physical and mental health started to deteriorate, combined with his alcohol and drug use. Sellers was married four times. He had three children from his first two marriages, and he died from a heart attack at age 54 in 1980.
Wow. Young. Yeah.
Very young. So what else do we need to say about Peter Sellers before we move on?
I have nothing to add.
Okay. Chelsea?
I don't have anything to add.
Okay. Sounds good. So that's what we're going to be talking about today is the films of Peter Sellers. And our next segment is going to be the Midnight Double Feature. Midnight Double Feature is where we go around the panel. In this case, it'll be Sean and I talking about two movies from within Peter Sellers' catalog that could possibly be shown back to back. And Sean, what is your double feature going to be today?
All right, I'm going to start out with 1965's What's New, Pussycat.
Okay.
And this...
Tell me about that. I have not seen it.
Jeez. Well, it's about the song.
Okay.
The Tom Jones song.
Oh, I thought it was about Josie.
No, unfortunately it's not. I kind of wish it was. A playboy who refuses to give up his hedonistic lifestyle to settle down and marry his true love seeks help from a demented psychoanalyst
who is having romantic problems of his own.
Okay.
So Peter
Sellers, a psychoanalyst.
Yeah, Peter Sellers plays the psychoanalyst. It also stars Peter O'Toole, and Ursula Andress is in this film.
Oh, cool!
And it's one of those wacky romps. It almost borders, you know, in the Scooby-Doo cartoons when they would like run from room to room, and then it would be like, you know, they come out of the room that's completely in the wrong space.
Right.
It plays like that at the end of the film, and I grew very tired of it, and the much like The Graduate, where they play Mrs. Robinson over and over and over throughout the film, What's New Pussycat plays as well, and I just grew very, very tired of this movie.
So, better or worse than I Love You, Alice B. Toklas?
Kind of the same,
okay.
Because with Alice B. Toklas, they really just sat on top of that joke of, look at these people getting stoned who shouldn't be getting stoned. Isn't this hilarious?
Right.
This is kind of the same way. They just ride the jokes way too hard. It's about infidelity and adultery and casual sex and just, I guess probably, and I was talking about this with my mother because, you know, she was a teen in the 60s. So I wanted her take on it, and she said that you know, this was a different time, and that was, you know, a funny subject matter.
Okay.
Whereas today it's just not funny at all because it's not taboo. There's nothing naughty or salacious about it.
So the context of the times probably lent itself to the plot. So what are you pairing that with?
So I'm pairing this with 1967's Casino Royale. This was written by Wolf Mankiewicz and John Law. Directed by Val Guest and Ken Hughes. It stars Peter Sellers, Ursula Andress, there's your connective tissue, and David Niven. And also, the music from both films, the music was done by, what's that guy, World Needs Now Is Love, Sweet Love?
Oh, Burt Bacharach.
Music by Burt Bacharach.
Okay.
So yeah, that's my connective tissue there. Casino Royale is a send-up of the James Bond stories. It was actually inspired by the book Casino Royale.
By Ian Fleming.
And David Niven plays Sir James Bond in his later years, and he's been cast and thrust into the lead of the entire spy agency.
Right.
He's in charge at an advanced age. And so you have Moneypenny's daughter... kind of filling in, and you know, the children of the people that we find that we know from the James Bond stories.
And there's several other Bonds in the movie, right?
Right. Yeah, a lot
Peter
of
Peter Sellers.
Yeah, a lot of people
Woody
play
Allen.
A character. Well, yeah, and not to give it away, but Woody Allen is the villain in this. He's Jimmy Bond.
Jimmy Bond.
But he's also Dr. Noah.
Oh.
And Orson Welles is in this.
Okay.
Big fat Orson Welles.
Wow.
Gotcha.
And this one's more successful, I think, as a comedy. Austin Powers borrowed extremely heavily from this film.
I can see
there
that.
There are some, I mean, direct lifts. I mean, just you see scenes from this movie and you're like, holy shit, I've seen that in Austin Powers. It's not even inspirational. It's like we took this right from this film and dropped it into another.
So I'm pretty sure that this Casino Royale is technically the first time that the character James Bond was portrayed on screen. And Ursula Andress would later go on to be a Bond girl.
Absolutely.
Which is pretty cool.
So yeah, those are my two. And I recommend Casino Royale. I don't recommend What's New Pussycat.
Fair enough. Chelsea, any thoughts on that?
No.
Okay. So my midnight double feature, I am going with a couple of comedies. Yeah, they're comedies. The first one is from 1976. It was directed by John Barry, and it's got a 67% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's called Murder by Death. Murder by Death is based on a Neil Simon play, and it's a comic tribute to detective films, beginning when a reclusive millionaire invites a number of famed detectives, each a parody of a famous literary sleuth, to dinner. Naturally, a series of murders soon begins, and the humorous race to be the first to solve the mystery is on. You've got an all-star cast, including Peter Falk, David Niven, Alec Guinness, Maggie Smith, Peter Sellers, and Truman Capote.
Yep.
I do have to point out, though, that Peter Sellers' character is pretty offensive. You wouldn't be able to pull this off now because he's playing an Asian person named Inspector Wang. And it wasn't the only time that he would do that in his career. So that's kind of a mark against Peter Sellers.
Well, but yeah, by today's standards, absolutely.
Would never fly. All right. And then I'm pairing that with a movie from 1955. It was directed by Alexander McKendrick, and it's got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's called The Lady Killers. The Lady Killers is about a music professor, played by Alec Guinness, who rents a London flat from a sweet old lady named Katie Johnson. I think that actually might be the actress's name. He tells her that from time to time, several other musicians will visit in order to rehearse. In truth, Guinness can't play a note, nor can his visitors. He's a criminal mastermind holding court over a gang of thieves, including the likes of punkish Peter Sellers, homicidal Herbert Loam, punch-drunk Danny Green, and so the gang uses Guinness's flat as headquarters while they conceive a daring 60,000-pound robbery. That's pretty heavy. But this is the basis for the Joel and Ethan Coen remake, The Lady Killers, which was not successful.
How does this measure up?
I think that this one is by far superior.
Okay.
The Coen brothers one was a real misstep in their career.
I was really disappointed in that movie. And that was the one that was Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks, yep. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the theme, the connective tissue is you've got crimes, you have death or kill in the titles, and they're both comedic films starring Peter Sellers.
How'd you like Murder by Death?
I liked it. I think that it would actually make a very good double feature with the movie Clue.
Yes.
Very similar themes there.
It's been about 10 years since I've seen it, but I remember liking it.
Yeah.
So that's good.
All right. So, I'm gonna say recommend on The Lady Killers, the 1955 version, and recommend on Murder by Death, overlooking the racial overtones. All right. Anything else we need to say about double features?
No.
Okay, that's going to bring us into our feature segment tonight, where we are going to do a recast of a couple of movies. The first movie that we're recasting is from 1964. We've talked about it on the show before, but we've never recast it. It was directed by Stanley Kubrick, and it's got a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's called Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. So we've got loaded with thermonuclear weapons, a U.S. bomber piloted by Major T.J. King Kong, played by Slim Pickens, is on a routine flight pattern near the Soviet Union when they receive orders to commence Wing Attack Plan R, best summarized by Major Kong as nuclear combat, toe-to-toe with the Ruskies. On the ground at Burpleson Air Force Base, Group Captain Lionel Mandrake, played by Peter Sellers, notices nothing on the news about America being at war. General Jack D. Ripper, played by Sterling Hayden, calmly informs him that he gave the command to attack the Soviet Union because it was high time someone did something about the fluoridation of their precious bodily fluids, which is sapping America's precious bodily fluids, and apparently has something to do with Ripper's sexual dysfunction. Meanwhile, President Merkin Muffley, played by Sellers again, meets with his top Pentagon advisors, including Super Hawk General Buck Turgidson, played by George C. Scott, who sees this as an opportunity to do something about communism in general and Russians in particular. However, the ante is upped considerably when Soviet Ambassador Dosadesky, played by Peter Bull, informs Muffley and his staff of the latest innovation in Soviet weapons technology, a doomsday machine that will destroy the entire world if the Russians are attacked. So, classic film. I know that former guests Knowles and Joey Poole are big fans of this, and they wanted to be here, but circumstances did not allow it. How do you feel about it, Sean?
It's a great movie. It's the very definition of satire, political satire.
Yes.
They really, really pull no punches when it comes to their commentary on the Cold War and the state of the world in 1964. I think it's really funny that the president's name is Merkin Muffley because he has no hair on top of his head.
Right.
So he's got to have it somewhere else.
Yeah, the characters' names are hilarious on their own. So the roles that we're going to recast, there's a few of them. We mentioned Peter Sellers a few times there in the description. He actually played three roles in this film. He played the base commander, he played the president, and he also played Dr. Strangelove, the title character. Then we've got George C. Scott as General Buck Turgidson. We've got Slim Pickens as Major King Kong. And we've got Sterling Hayden as Brigadier General Jack D. Ripper. So, Sean, who's going to be your Dr. Strangelove?
My Dr. Strangelove. Sellers was 39 at the time. I'm going way older with my recast.
Okay.
I'm going.
I am as well.
Oh, good, good. I'm going with an actor who is now 55 years old and was born in South Carolina.
Oh.
He is known for his appearance in the film The Love Guru.
Okay.
The very icily received film that was.
The Mike Myers vehicle?
Yes.
Okay.
He's done a lot of voice work for animation, including TV Funhouse on SNL.
Okay.
As well as Birdman, Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law.
Uh-huh.
But most people will know him from, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert. It's Stephen Colbert.
Oh, that's good, dude. That is actually a really good choice. I like it. So interestingly enough, even though he was born in South Carolina, we've probably talked about this before, he intentionally lost his Southern accent because he noticed that on television and movies, people from the South were often portrayed as less intelligent.
I did the same thing in eighth grade.
Whereas Peter Sellers could very easily do an American accent, even though he was English. All right, well, my Dr. Strangelove is going to be an actor who is 59 now. 59. He is a voice in The Nightmare Before Christmas. He's also a voice in Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. He's also probably best known for being a regular player on Whose Line Is It Anyway? I went with Greg Proops.
Oh, good.
Oh,
good.
Greg Proops is going to be my Dr. Strangelove. He's also one of our peers.
He's a peer.
He has a podcast called The Smartest Man in the World.
Yes, something like that.
Something like that. All right. next up, we've got Buck Turgidson, played by George C. Scott, and kind of a send-up of his portrayal of Patton, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Straight up.
And so who is going to be your George C. Scott, General Buck Turgidson?
Again, going a bit older, let's see, Scott was 37 at the time.
Correct.
I'm going with someone who's 57.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
He's a career military guy. And he's an excellent, excellent dramatic actor, but he's also an excellent comedic actor. You will know him from films such as Foxcatcher, Little Miss Sunshine, and The 40-Year-Old Virgin. I'm talking about Steve Carell.
Very good. So they both got their start on the very short-lived Dana Carvey show. Okay, so my general is an actor who's 51 now. He is in 13 Going on 30. He was in Zodiac. He was in The Kids Are All Right. And I've chopped him before. Most people would know him as the most recent Incredible Hulk. His name is Mark Ruffalo.
I like it.
I love him.
Mark Ruffalo is going to be my General Buck Turgidson.
I would love to meet Mark Ruffalo.
Right?
That would be awesome.
He's probably one of my favorite actors in terms of every single time just nailing it. So yeah, good pick on that one.
All right. Then we've got Major King Kong, who was played by Slim Pickens, who was 45 at the time. And I sometimes get this character confused with the character that he played in the film 1941, whose name was Hollis Wood. he's a Christmas tree salesman who gets trapped on a Japanese submarine. But anyway, not the same.
I always forget that Slim Pickens was in Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So that actually will come up later. So your King Kong.
All right, so he was 45 at the time. I went with an actor who was 48.
Okay.
He was in the film Warm Bodies, the zombie rom-com. He's also been in Hot Tub Time Machine, but you'll know him from the TV show Children's Hospital.
Yes.
Rob Corddry.
So good, dude. So, there's, isn't there a picture of him? Nope, that's Paul Scheer. Never mind. Another bald comedian. So my Slim Pickens. One thing we should say is that Slim Pickens wasn't a good-looking man.
No.
Nor was he slim.
No.
So my actor is 59 now. He was in Tombstone. He was also in The Saint. He was in The Doors. And he's also in Top Gun. I'm talking Fat Val Kilmer. Fat Val Kilmer is going to be my Slim Pickens.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
So this, in this picture, he's got like a triple chin going on. But right. I think he actually has lost weight recently, possibly due to health reasons. Possibly also because he's going to be in the new Top Gun movie, Top Gun Maverick.
You know, he made that film Top Secret. I think he's in line for the role in Pop Secret.
Aha!
Hey.
And
okay, I'm sorry.
oh, he's also in a movie that came out recently-ish that I've been wanting to watch, not dying to because it's been available and I haven't seen it yet, but it's called The Super, and it's about a superintendent of a building, an apartment complex. Is it superintendent when you manage?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah.
Yeah, and he's but he's up to nefarious things.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. We've got one more, and that is going to be the role of Brigadier General Jack D. Ripper, played by Sterling Hayden, who was 48 at the time.
Jack the Ripper.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so 48 at the time, I went with a guy who's 56.
Okay.
He was in Death to Smoochie.
Okay.
He was in The Faculty. Hmm. He was in Half-Baked.
Okay. Oh, wait. Ooh. Can I guess?
Go for it.
Is it Jim Brewer?
No.
Okay.
It's John Stewart.
Oh, yeah. John Stewart would be awesome.
Did you catch my theme?
These are all late night personalities. They're not?
Daily Show alumni.
Okay, gotcha.
Because it's political satire.
Very good. Okay, yeah. who's the last one you just said?
John Stewart.
John Stewart wasn't a late night host, was he? The Daily Show isn't really a late night show, is it?
Yeah, because it came on early.
Prime time.
Yeah.
All right, so my actor playing the role of Jack D. Ripper is 59 now. Well, any of these examples are going to give it away. He was in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He was in Dead Man Walking and Mystic River. I was going for somebody who looked kind of angry and might be concerned about our precious bodily fluids. I went with Sean Penn as my my General Jack D. Ripper.
I dig it.
So I like what you did there with your political satire
theme.
Thanks,
man. Appreciate it.
And this definitely is an outstanding example of that. Really a strong recommend on my part, I would say.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. This is, a like I said, the very definition of political satire. Mm-hmm. Just cool. Clever as all get out.
Chelsea?
So I've just kind of been reading a little bit about Peter Sellers. Okay. And 64 seemed like a fucked up year for him.
Yeah?
In what way? He married his second wife, Britt Eklund, after an 11-day courtship.
Whoa.
And then when they went to have sex, he took amyl nitrates, which is a vasodilator, suffered 8 heart attacks.
Whoa.
Yikes.
And then he said he was like, you have to have a heart in order to have an attack.
Oh, really?
Ouch.
Yeah.
While they were having sex, he had 4 heart attacks?
It was eight
heart attacks?
Oh, it says over the course of 3 hours.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay. So don't take amyl nitrate and Peter Sellers. Okay. So, that's a recommend all the way around then for Dr. Strangelove. So we are going to head into intermission, but not before we say, let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby and get ourselves something from the cellar.
Oh, nice.
All right, Chop Shoppers, thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis, and I just have one question for you, Sean. what is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under reviewed.
Like make it a whole pyramid scheme. Get the people under them to do it and multiply.
A podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes. You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show. Don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our 2019 movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in. And enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
And we are back. Thank you, Chop Shoppers, for bearing with us during the intermission. That's a lot of steps down there into the cellar. And when we come back from intermission, what do we like to do, Sean?
I like to do a beer check-in.
Beer check-in. And we've got one that is on theme today.
It is indeed on theme. We're going to beat the heat with this sweet and tart summer treat. This is Strawberry Rhubarb Pie Goza from Westbrook Brewing in Charleston, South Carolina.
Nice.
And the reason it's on theme is because it's pink.
It's pink. And just like the Pink Panther, it's all pink on the inside. So while we enjoy that beer, we're going to do our movie marathon, the 2019 movie marathon is where Sean and I and whoever else would like to participate. We try to watch as many movies as we can throughout the calendar year, and the goal being one for every day of the year. However, I'm a little bit behind. I'm making up some time though, making up some movies.
You've been checking in a lot lately.
I'm not making up the movies. I'm making up for the slackness that I've been subject to recently. So it is the 249th day of the year, and I'm on number 230. So, Sean, what number are you on?
278.
Dude, you're getting really close. Like you said last week, you're within 100 of...
Yeah, I'm within shouting distance.
Yep. All right, so what is your first movie that you're going to check in going
to
be?
I think you checked this one in already, but I'm going to check in... X-Men Dark Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And just kind of jump on what you had said about it. It's the violator of the show don't tell rule of storytelling.
Okay.
There's way too much exposition
right.
in this movie and not enough display of what's happening.
Mm-hmm. And you were saying that the storyline is one of the better arcs in Marvel Comics.
Yeah, I would consider it the classic X-Men story arc. And they really shortchanged it, and I just think that it deserved better. And knowing that it was Fox's last hurrah before Disney took it over, it's just a bitter disappointment.
So, you may or may not know. I'm going to ask anyway. Before they did the whole time shift thing with Days of Future Past, did they address the Jean Grey Dark Phoenix thing with the older cast or the previous cast?
Did they address... Oh, in the movie?
Yeah, in the movies.
You know, I don't remember that.
I know they did in the cartoon, in the X-Men cartoons.
I don't remember it being brought up in Days of Future Past, which, you know, is typical of the whole X-Men franchise. Mm-hmm. Like, so much of it's very disjointed.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a complaint as well.
I kind of lost interest when they did that, where they switched to the all younger cast and they were... younger, but still in modern day. I was like, what's going on here? All right. So that's going to be not a recommend?
Not a recommend for me.
Okay. So today I'm going to be talking about three documentaries. The first one I really enjoyed. It is called Memory, The Origin of Alien. And it's basically the story of the conception of the first Alien movie and the production that went into it and the creators of that. My review was really cool documentary about a once great franchise. I really liked the first few Alien movies, but they've lost their way, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so recommend on the documentary, not necessarily a recommend on newer Alien movies. Sean?
All right, so check-in number 278 for me is a relatively new, I guess you'll call it a horror film, The Wind.
Yeah.
This is a female-written and female-directed horror story of desolation and isolation.
Filmed in?
It takes place on the Pioneer Prairie, but it was filmed in New Mexico. And all of the music was recorded in Asheville, North Carolina. I call it Little Demon on the Prairie.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. It starts out at the end of the film and kind of works its way backwards through flashback storytelling. But the problem is we have a flawed narrator. So you don't really know what part of the story is to believe and not believe. And then you get some supernatural elements that may or may not be supernatural. It could be
in their head.
Maybe psychosis.
Right.
Which completely plays into that whole deal of women being left alone in these little, lean-to houses out in the middle of nowhere while their husbands go and take care of business. Mm-hmm. You're left with your own thoughts, so naturally some weird shit's going to go on in your brain.
Indeed.
It's a good one. I really recommend watching this.
I agree. You recommended it to me, and I asked you, is it scary? And you said, no, creepy. And I was like, okay. You're like kind of like The Witch. And I was like, okay. And so I watched it, and it was scary as fuck, man. I immediately had to go watch the new Dave Chappelle special on Netflix to get that scary white people shit out of my head. My review of that one, I said, that's some scary ass frontier demon shit right there. I think that we've got a total of maybe 6 cast members.
Yeah.
Very small cast.
Yeah.
But yeah, solid recommend. Next for me is going to be another documentary. This one is available for free on PBS on their website and streaming apps. It's called Big Family, The Story of Bluegrass Music. It's from 2019. And I said that it was very informative and entertaining documentary about the genre. I have a very peripheral knowledge of, or prior to watching this documentary, I have a very peripheral knowledge of bluegrass and the history of it. But the title is very apt because, of course, it talks about Bill Monroe being the father of bluegrass. But you don't realize how many of the other big, heavy hitters in bluegrass actually worked with him or were taught by him. Ralph Stanley, Lester Flatt, and Earl Scruggs.
Earl Scruggs, yeah.
Yeah, just some really good documentary.
We really need Knowles on this episode.
Yeah, he would have a lot to say about it. And I'm pretty sure that he's seen this. If he hasn't already, he needs to. But yeah, it's a recommend as well.
Cool. By the way, what do you think about the beer?
I like it. I like it a lot. And at first, I just kind of tasted the foam on top. And I was like, it's like sherbet or something, you know?
Yeah.
And then you get into it, and it's got a little bit more of that robust sourness, but still very, very drinkable.
Yeah, it's tasty. I my only regret is that this came out so late in the summertime.
Yeah.
We could have really enjoyed this about a month and a half ago.
True.
All right, my final check-in for the week will be True Stories from 1986. It is the only feature film directed by David Byrne of the Talking Heads.
Oh, no shit.
I always felt like the music video Wild Wild Life belonged in a movie. Now I know I wasn't wrong.
What do you mean, Wild Wild Life?
The song Wild Wild Life by Talking Heads.
Okay, gotcha.
It's like a bar where people get up on stage and sing the song, and there's like this wall of TV screens in the background. John Goodman's in it.
Cool.
A lot of crazy characters. It's taken directly from the film.
Oh wow!
And I was like, okay,
that makes
it's part
sense.
Of a movie, but it is truly David Byrne's snapshot of slice of life Americana in Texas.
Interesting.
And it's, you know, he has some biting commentary in a lot of his music about commercialism, strip malls, malls in general. This movie is kind of a continuation of his philosophy, but it's told from a more positive point of view. But you can still get that feeling that he's kind of criticizing our consumerism as Americans. It is it was co-written by Byrne as well, but the head writer on it was Stephen Tobolowsky.
Oh,
wow.
No interesting. Shit.
Toblo himself.
Yeah.
So tell me the title again.
True Stories.
True Stories, but it is fictional.
It's fictional, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
Cool. And so do you get any of that David Byrne weirdness? Because I think it goes without saying he's kind of a weird dude.
There's some when I, you know, weirdness in that it's kind of like a hyper cheesy idealized America.
Okay.
You get that. He wears a cowboy hat the entire film. And a lot of it he spends talking from his convertible Cadillac.
Okay.
And oftentimes he's looking at you as if you're in the passenger seat talking to you, and he's driving, but the steering wheel is not connected to anything. Sometimes the steering wheel is just like wobbling around out in the middle of nowhere. So
tricks.
So a lot of weird, quirky things that you would expect from him. But I highly, highly recommend this movie, and I wish that David Byrne would direct another film.
How did I drive here?
Exactly.
Okay, I've got one more as well. It is a documentary. It's from 2018, and it is called Hal, H-A-L. And it's an in-depth documentary about the great Hal Ashby, director of films like Harold and Maude, Coming Home, and Being There with Peter Sellers. Really solid documentary, and I also mentioned that I got to watch it in like super high def, so it was very pleasing. They get into not only his creative process and the ups and downs of his career. He started out as an editor and made a name for himself as an editor before going on to be a director. And also his personality. Apparently the guy was a massive stoner, which comes across in some of the films that he made. So yeah, I gave it 3.5 stars. Could be a little bit higher probably.
Okay.
Recommends on all three.
Good deal. Chelsea, have you seen anything new?
It's an old, well, I guess not super old, but I finally watched A Simple Favor with Blake Lively Anna Kendrick. Oh my God, I loved it.
That was a pretty good one. All right. So anything else we need to say about our movie marathon?
No, we're just going to keep plugging along and watching movies.
All right. So that will bring us to the second part of our feature segment. And with this one, we are recasting one of his last films. It is from 1979. We mentioned at the top of the show that he died in 1980 at the age of 54. Being There from 1979, directed by Hal Ashby. It's got a 96% on Rotten Tomatoes. So I did not write down in my notes any kind of synopsis, but can you give us a quick breakdown,
Sean? I'm in love with this movie.
It's so good.
It's so good.
It's so good and still relevant to this day. I consider it a Emperor's New Clothes type spin.
Ah, yeah.
You've got a simpleton in Peter Sellers' character, Chance, a.k.a. Chauncey Gardner.
A.k.a. Chance the Rapper.
Yes. He finds himself without a home, essentially. He's the gardener at this rich man's estate, and that rich man dies, and so he essentially gets turned out.
He's never learned to read. He's never even been outside of the house.
Right. And so he eventually finds his way into the home of a wealthy industrialist who's at the end of his life, and his very young wife, played by Shirley MacLaine. And through his straight talk in terms of, in Washington terms, charms his way into their lives, finds residence in their home.
And people think that he's being very insightful and philosophical, but he's really just very plain spoken.
He's very plain and direct. And he elevates himself through political circles by no effort of his own, other than, as you said, being direct. And it's a delightful movie because you've got these political elites who think they know it all, and they're being bamboozled by this guy, but it's not malicious bamboozling.
Right.
He's not doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
They're just buying into what he's saying and he has no clue what relevance what he's saying is to them. However, the people who are the salt of the earth people can see it. They're like, this guy ain't right. He's not smart. Yeah. He's stupid. He's dumb as a rock. His former
he really is a gardener.
His former caretaker or the maid of the house, the caretaker of the former house. She had some pretty choice things to say about him.
She said she raised him since he was no bigger than a biscuit, and he was born with corn pudding between the ears or something like that.
More or less, yeah. It's great. I cannot recommend this movie enough. This was so good.
So a couple of other things. The poster, especially, and also some of the visual stylings in the movie are, at least to me, influenced by the painter René Magritte. You've got the bowler hats and I don't want to give away too much, but there's some visual elements there. Also, filmed on location, not on location, but filmed at Biltmore Estate
in Asheville. Yeah, that was the great revelation for me, because every time they showed the outside of the house, which was supposed to be in Washington, I'm like,
That looks familiar.
That house looks really familiar to me. And sure enough, it's filmed entirely at Biltmore.
So I have been to Biltmore, and I kind of resent the experience, because people who go there to visit pay a whole bunch of money to go and visit Biltmore to see the result of a whole bunch of money.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a great movie, and we've got 1, 2, 3, 4 roles that we're going to recast. We've got Chance the Gardener, played by Peter Sellers. He was 54 at the time. We've got Eve Rand, played by Shirley MacLaine, and she was 45 at the time. Then we've got Ben Rand, kind of a Warren Buffett-type character who has the ear of the president. He was played by Melvin Douglas, who was 78 at the time. Then finally we've got Dr. Allenby, who's very skeptical of...
Astute, even.
Yeah, of Chance's character. And I kind of got the feeling that he was really waiting around for the old man to die so that he could swoop in and steal up Shirley MacLaine's character.
You got that vibe?
That's
okay.
That's what my lovely wife, Michelle,
I believe that.
Yeah. So, who are you going to recast in the main role of Chauncey Gardner?
All right, so as I was watching this, Sellers was 54. I went with somebody who's 59. As I'm watching it, I said I cannot not cast this guy, but okay. I just cast him about a month ago.
Doesn't matter.
So you'll probably figure it out quickly. He was in the film Big Night. He was in the film Spotlight. He was in The Hunger Games. Captain America.
Is it Stanley Tucci?
It's Stanley Tucci.
That's good, dude.
Stanley Tucci is a ringer.
Yeah.
For Sellers at that point in his career.
You say that, but wait until you see mine.
Okay.
Okay, so my actor is actually 60 now, and you would recognize him from things like True Romance. He was also in Risky Business. He was in Beverly Hills Cop. But most people know him as Balky from Perfect Strangers. His name is Bronson Pinchot. P-I-N-C-H-O-T.
That's pretty funny.
It's pretty good, right?
A fish out of water. Yeah. I get that part of it, too.
Pretty good. All right. Next up, we've got Eve Rand, played by Shirley MacLaine. Do you think that they intentionally named her Eve for some kind of like biblical reference?
I do.
I think so. And also, I wonder if the name Rand was chosen specifically in reference to Ayn Rand.
Yeah.
Atlas Shrugged type stuff.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That whole more, you know, raise yourself up as your own kind of thing. Yeah, I think that was intentional.
Okay.
This is my favorite recasting of the entire film. Let's see. Shirley MacLaine, as you said, was...
45.
45. I've lost my sheet. Thank you. And so I'm going with somebody who's 48. I want to get just a tad bit older.
Okay.
She was in The Sweetest Thing.
Hmm.
She was in Bad Moms.
Okay.
This is the dead giveaway. She was in Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Yeah.
Yay!
Christina Applegate.
Awesome, dude. No relation to Jodie Applegate, but fair enough. She was also in Married with Children.
She also Married with Children, but also a song and dance person as well, like Shirley MacLaine.
Very cool. Okay, well, my actress is 42 now. This is actually one of the few recasts that I went younger on. The actress is in the movie Flight.
Okay.
The Denzel Washington drunk, drugged up pilot movie. And also she is in Sherlock Holmes with Robert Downey Jr.
Okay.
She was in True Detective Season 2.
Uh-huh.
And she's also in a TV show with Kevin Costner called Yellowstone. Her name is Kelly Riley.
Kelly Riley.
She's a really good actress. And on that show, Yellowstone, she plays tough as nails country girl.
Cool.
Even though she actually is English, she does a perfect American accent.
Gotcha.
All right, next up, we've got the role of Ben Rand, who was played by Melvin Douglas, the old man, who was 78 at the time. And like you said, he's kind of at the end of his arc, and he knows it. But he still tries to present the appearance of somebody who's still got it all together. And financially, he does. So your Melvin Douglas, your Ben Rand, is going to be who, Sean?
All right, I'm going with an actor who's 76. He'll probably need to play it like he's a little bit frailer than he is in real life, but he has aged from the way I remembered him in his most well-known role. He was in RoboCop.
Okay.
He was in Deep Impact.
All right.
He was in Star Trek VI. But most people know him from the 70s show, or that 70s show. It's Kurtwood Smith.
Oh, yeah.
It's Red.
Because you're a dumbass, son. That's good, dude. I like that. And you might actually have to age him up a little bit. Yeah. How old did you say
he's 76 now?
He's 76?
Yeah, you should look at his current pictures. He's showing his age.
He's getting up there?
Yeah.
My actor, he's an actor. He's also a producer and director. Sometimes he acts in his own films. You might recognize him from The Producers, Young Frankenstein, Putney Swope, Blazing Saddles. His name is Mel Brooks. Mel Brooks is 93 now. 93 and still funny as hell.
Please.
I like that one.
Just plain yogurt.
Yes. All right.
I really like that pick. That's a good one.
Thank you. I thought about doing Rob Reiner, but I thought that this guy has a little bit more of the same countenance. Mel Brooks, that is. All right, so... Wait, did I say Rob Reiner? I meant Carl Reiner.
Carl Reiner.
Carl Reiner. Who's Rob Reiner's dad in real life, though, right?
Yes, you're...
Okay. So, let's see here.
That brings us to Dr. Robert Allenby. Allenby?
Uh-huh. Yep. Dr. Allenby was played by Richard A. Dysart, D-Y-S-A-R-T, and he was 50 at the time. Sean?
All right, so I'm with an actor who's 56, and I wanted to also play up a little bit more about how he was clued in on Chance's real nature. And in order to be that, I said that a lot of the lower class people mm-hmm. had it. I figured I needed somebody who had a disadvantage, a societal disadvantage,
okay,
that would let you say, okay, he can connect,
right,
and understand. Mm-hmm. So this actor was actually born with osteogenesis imperfecta.
What does that mean?
It is a genetic anomaly that kind of stunts your growth,
okay,
and affects your ability to be mobile.
Okay.
So this actor was in Carnival.
Okay, on I HBO. Remember that. Yeah.
He was in Mulholland Drive.
David Lynch.
But most people would know him from Twin Peaks as the man from another place. He is the other arm. It's Michael J. Anderson.
Michael J. Anderson. Okay.
He's the little guy from,
the
Red
all
Lodge.
Right. Okay. All right, yeah. Cool. So my actor, you would know him from, a lot of things. He's a character actor, has a very distinctive look about him. He was in Captain America, the first couple of those. He's also in a couple of the Hunger Games movies. He's in Atomic Blonde. He was also on a TV show called Wayward Pines. His name is Toby Jones.
I just cast him like 2 weeks ago.
Toby
Jones. I love Toby
Jones. I've chopped him before as well, but I think that he is a dead ringer for Dr.
He's an excellent actor, and he would be great in this part.
Very nice. All right, so what else do we need to say that we haven't already said about being there?
Stop what you're doing and watch this movie.
Right?
It's as fresh today as it was in 1979.
I believe that this is one of Travis Knoll's favorite movies. In fact, so he's good. The one who originally recommended it to me years ago.
I did not know this movie existed, and I'm just, my life is changed because of it. I love this movie.
So good. One last thing that I will say is that I think that the reason that Chance is able to do some of the things that he can do is because he doesn't know that he can't.
That's a good point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right. So recommend all around for being there. Which brings us to our bonus segment. It's going to be a battle royale between two people we've mentioned already today. Of course, Peter Sellers and David Niven.
Okay.
Peter Sellers and David Niven have worked together at least 4 times. They worked together in The Pink Panther. They were also in Murder by Death. They were in Casino Royale. And they were in Trail of the Pink Panther, which actually came out in 1984 after Peter Sellers' death. So all of the scenes with Peter Sellers as Clouseau are deleted scenes from previous Pink Panther movies.
Right.
Which to me is kind of a cash grab.
Total cash
probably
grab.
Probably should not have been done.
And I believe that there was a lawsuit from the family of Peter Sellers for that as well. I think they got a piece of that action after the fact.
All right, Chelsea, here's your time to shine.
Peter Sellers.
Peter Sellers. For what reason?
Because you can't take amyl nitrates and...
Have sex for 3 hours?
Have sex for 3 hours and then have eight heart attacks.
And live.
Yeah, for, you know, quite a long time after that.
16 more years.
So, yeah, he's going to kick ass.
Okay. Sean?
I'll be contrarian and go with David
Whatever.
Niven. Well, somebody has to. No, I don't have a reason. You know, I mean, like you said, he is so tightly associated with Peter Sellers. Uh-huh. I think that perhaps there might be a mistaken identity thing going on.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
They might even, you know, I always thought that David Niven should have been in the Star Wars films.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
He could have been an Imperial officer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Like a Grand Moff Tarkin type.
Yeah, exactly. I these two are so linked in my mind. I think that maybe he just pulls some sort of shenanigans in that regard.
Okay. Well, I'm also going to go with David Niven. Okay.
Whatever.
Because, whatever. Because fresh on the heels of our Sean Connery movie, David Niven was technically the first person to play 007 James Bond
on
a movie screen. So that is going to be our battle royale, and it brings us to the conclusion of the show. We want to wrap up. I want to thank the guest and ask her if she has anything that she'd like to plug.
I don't have anything to plug. I'm sorry I was quiet. I was getting eaten alive by a mosquito in here.
Excuses.
Well, we have some mosquitoes stirred up by the Dorian... Nothing burger.
Right?
Nothing burger.
I know the guys in Charleston and Myrtle Beach probably got hit pretty bad. But
and our hearts go out to the
absolutely,
Bahamas.
But around here, there was a lot to do about nothing for us. We had a little bit of rain, a little bit of wind. Thank goodness. We're lucky.
It could have been a lot worse, and about a year ago, it was a lot worse. So we also want to plug the podcast itself. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us on. We're also hosted natively on podbean.com. We are Cinema Chop Shop on there. And I did just notice that Podbean has developed their own app. So you can download the Podbean app and listen to us on there.
Never miss an episode.
Never ever. We're on Twitter. It's at Cinema Chop Shop on Twitter. Our Facebook is facebook.com/cinemachopshop. And then our email address, which I'm getting a little bit better about actually checking, is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. And then the beer, the on-theme beer that we checked in today, it's a strawberry rhubarb pie goza from Westbrook Brewing. It will be checked in on Untappd, UNTAPPD. And I also want to thank the engineer. And do you have any plugs, sir?
No, not really. Well, I take that back. We have some cool things coming up at the brewery.
Yes.
If you are in the Florence, South Carolina area, we have I think it's a benefit fundraiser hot wing eating contest coming up.
Wings for Angels.
That's on the 28th.
Thank you very much. We also have an oyster roast coming up.
Because we're in a month that ends in R.
Check our Facebook for that.
I'm going to be all over that.
Yeah, and I think we have another beer dinner coming up too.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. And let's not forget Right Answers with Wrong Travis.
Your weekly trivia contest at Seminar Brewing. That's seminarbrewing.com. And Sean, what is next week's episode?
We're talking about the films of one Oliver Stone.
Yeah, that's true. On in celebration of his upcoming 73rd birthday, which is on September 15th. And so what we like to do at this point is do a trivia Q&A, one sneak preview question and answer, and we will say it here, and then it'll be a question in this coming week's Right Answers with Wrong Travis. So, Stone shares the exact same birthday, day and month and year, as one of his good friends and the star of some of his films. Both were born on September 15th, 1946. Who is that other figure who shares his birthday?
I don't know.
It's Tommy Lee Jones.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Tommy Lee Jones and Oliver Stones have the exact same birthday. And so if you listen to this, you will already be one ahead of the other ignorant motherfuckers who don't. So with that, we're going to say farewell. Thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in on your tuning forks. And please remember to watch, chop, retrofit.